Good morning. I'm Stephen E. Pop, and this is our morning weekend garden show in the garden. And with me here in the studio is Joe Truscott. Say good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
We have with us today, also in the studio, our special guest. We're taking a little turn to the south of the border, like south of the Panama border, to Colombia. And our returning guest, Marco Poner. Say good morning, Marco.
Good morning, folks.
Marco is a true horticulturalist and environmentalist, troupeneur of a sort, with a nature preserve in the southwestern mountains of Colombia, outside of Cali. And tell us a little bit about your preserve there, Marco.
Well, my preserve, as I came to find out years after purchasing the somewhat abandoned farm, in 1989, I found out that it was within the boundaries or borders of a national park, which is Farallones de Cali National Park. So we have Farallones there too. Mm-hmm. Californians may be somewhat familiar with the Farallon Islands that are in the northwest, but we have Farallones that are not underwater, and they reach a height of about 14,000 feet above where I am, and I'm in the foothills to that, so I'm at an elevation about 5,500 feet, 1,700 meters above sea level. And it's a mild climate. It's very temperate. It's the temperature ranges. And by the way, I will challenge gardeners, and especially gardeners who have children, to do what I've been doing for the last 30-some years, which is to take note about the weather. So I measure rainfall, precipitation. I measure relative humidity on a daily basis, three times a day. I measure temperatures three times a day. So I can see the oscillations, and I can compare one year to the other. What is normal climate and what is not? What is going on weird? And this is a really wonderful time to begin doing that. Get a rain gauge and take measurements, and it'll be boring most of the time in California because the rain gauge will be dry. But when it rains, then you really do have something to talk about.
Well, so, and I too have taken weather observations like this for many, many years and have my rain gauge. But I think the important thing that we all understand is that weather is like what's going on today, right now, and climate is what are the long-term trends and how are things changing. And in Colombia, I know that you're 3 degrees north of the equator, essentially. In fact, the equator transits a portion of southern Colombia through the Amazonia area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you have essentially 4 seasons. I remember you telling me that 2 of them are dry and 2 of them are wet.
Yes.
But that is changing, is it not?
It is changing. And it's funny because one of the reasons I started keeping data many years ago was because nobody else seemed to be doing it. As I said, I didn't even know I was in a national park because the agents of the national park and the Ministry of the Environment, as what it's called there, Ministerio de Ambiente, were in the background. They didn't want to appear because it was dangerous for them to be going, up into the mountains and so on. Data wasn't kept, and now there seems to be a weather station, but I can question its reliability because I know who runs it. I think what's important is because people talk off the top of their heads of, oh, isn't this year different from last year?
Mm-hmm. Now, with Colombia, though, not having a dry season, how is that impacting all of the forest and the growth? And before you answer that, I want to remind folks that Colombia is a trading partner with the U.S. It's our 13th largest importer of agricultural commodities to the U.S., top among them coffee, tea, and spices. And interesting to me was live trees and nursery plants, bananas and plantains, and then snack foods. But I know that there are other crops that are grown there and that are dominating some of it. But how is all of this weather affecting that, this lack of a dry season?
Well, I can observe because on my nature reserve, I still have some non-natives that I continue to cultivate. I don't just leave them there, but bananas being one of them. Mm-hmm. I like to keep about 300 plantain and banana plants going so that I have a consistent crop for my own consumption, for the animals that come, which are coming in increasing numbers. I'll go through one great big bunch of bananas. That's, let's say, 100 to 150 bananas in 3 days, just feeding the birds.
Oh, wow.
Feeding tanagers, and then, you know, I have a lot of hummingbirds that come too. And one of the purposes of my horticulture there is to attract more hummingbirds of the species that are native. So I have about 11 different species that come to my reserve on a daily basis, fly in and out of my house.
Mm.
But bananas are a plant that does require some warmth, and it's definitely slowed things down. Mm. I'm not sure how Colombia is faring as a nation in terms of it, loss of its banana crops. But that's something I am checking into. That's a major one. And then, of course, rain is going to affect coffee because coffee is needs both warmth and mm-hmm. and cold and a lot of rain, which normally Colombia is a rainy country in some portions. Mm. Now, Colombia is divided by the Andes Mountains, which fork into three ranges, the western, the central, and the eastern. To the east of the eastern range is Venezuela and Brazil mm-hmm. and the whole Amazon basin. But up north of the Amazon basin is our Great Plains. And unfortunately, that has been taken over largely by cattle, and more of the basin, the Amazon basin, is being destroyed to grow cattle mm. so that McDonald's can buy meat from Colombia and so on. But the other one that is you didn't list there mm-hmm. because it comes in terms of a refined product. It's not a crude product.
Ah.
But the growth of coca mm-hmm. To produce cocaine has increased. The war on drugs has made it a bigger, more popular thing. We have in the history of the war on drugs, more than 1 million people down there have been killed mm-hmm. because of the money raised by cocaine sniffers here in the States mm-hmm. and in Europe. But anyhow, coca, unfortunately, has not seem to suffer from much rain.
You know, interestingly enough, you and I were talking earlier about how the Sinaloa cartel now, which is not Colombian in origin
at all.
Is now very present there and fairly close to your property. Tell me again or tell our listeners about how they interacted with the farmers on the other side of the mountain from you.
Yeah, the other side of the mountain. Okay, again, this is Colombia. It has three mountain ranges. I'm on the western mountain range. I'm on the eastern side of the western range, so I'm not facing the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to understand that on the western side of the western range is the most biodiverse region of the world, and it also has the greatest precipitation to any place in the world. Thank God for mosquitoes. I love mosquitoes because they kill people.
Oh, God. We're not responsible for the views and
population control here.
The thing is that it's not the killing of the people who would settle there. It
right.
prevents them from settling
right.
there because they know they're going to wind up completely
mosquito
sick.
Coast. Who wants to be there? Yeah,
yeah. And so there's a great deal of biodiversity, and when we think of that, we often think of birds and tree toads and weird mammals and monkeys, but biodiversity includes protozoa,
mm-hmm.
and that includes malaria
mm-hmm.
and yellow fever and dengue, and I've had two of those.
Oh.
They are killers, but it keeps the population from taking over this area that is really, really vital to the world.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose the Chocó biogeographical region. So anyhow, I'm on the eastern slope of the mountain range. And so whatever water doesn't get dropped by trying to come from the Pacific up that mountain
range,
it gets dropped on the other side, which is where I am. So last dry season, I actually had a day in which I had 28 centimeters. Now, if you look at a regular ruler, a ruler is 12 inches, and it's 30-point-something centimeters. So you're looking at 11 inches in one day of rain. And just a couple of weeks ago, I had 8 centimeters in 1 hour. This is close to 4 inches in 1 hour. And so we have a very high precipitation. And watching that fluctuate, I mean, to have a dry season with 11 inches in one day is a record breaker for me. So it's
so this rain occurred during what would ordinarily be called the dry season.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So this creates a major problem. Now, one of the things that's good, and I invite anybody who wants to get into mushrooms that, in terms of scientific study of them, mycology, I had an inventory done on Agua Viva about in December last year. So a year ago. Exactly. Actually, on the 3rd of December, I began this study. In 3 days, we gathered 106 species of mushroom, of fungi. And of those 106, we were only able to identify about 48. So more than half of them were unidentified, and some of them unregistered. So there's a real challenge, and that's another aspect of research and biology that we're just beginning to scratch the surface. I understand.
Of course.
We only know about 5% of the fungi existent.
Yeah.
And that's a lot that is we don't know.
Well, especially in areas that are not heavily populated, so you don't know what's there and when it's blooming and when it's blooming and what triggers it. Mushrooms are very seasonal, so whatever the season is that gets them going.
Well, again, we have four seasons, and they're A-B-A-B really is the pattern. So wet, dry, and they correspond pretty closely to the four seasons in the more polar, in the arboreal So winter in the United States and Canada is dry season. Spring is wet season. Summer is dry season, and fall is wet season.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
So with all of this going on, and with the human activity that's going on, not just the cattle, but I understand sugarcane has become a major crop commodity, another non-native species that's been introduced. But with the coca plantations and operations and the cartels, they're now encroaching upon these other operations. Is that correct?
I don't think they encroach much on sugarcane, because sugarcane is basically a hand-me-down crop that was introduced by the Dutch when they first
colonized
Brazil in 1500s, early 1500s. They were the empire that colonized Brazil for 30 years, and then they got kicked out by the Portuguese again. They introduced sugarcane from India, and it crept across South America. And so Venezuela and Colombia have cultivations. Now, who cultivated it? They were the people who were given land by the Spanish crown with the blessing of the Roman Catholic Church, of the Pope. And so the idea, there was a deal in which if you conquered this land and submitted the native people to Christianity and to Western European customs, then that land would be under your title. So you could have hundreds of miles of land because basically you succeeded in subjugating the native people.
Not too different from early California and the Spanish, right?
Right. It was a system. It's a political protocol, and it still has not been revoked. So even with independence coming in 1820 in Colombia, slavery was abolished, but domestic servitude was not. And also the tenure of land was not changed.
Right.
So you have the most fertile valleys that have the proper climate are cultivated with sugar cane, which is a cash crop. It's subsidized by the Colombian government, kind of like oil is.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, oil is here too. Mm. And then cattle also gets subsidized. So there's some very important things that have come about in the last couple of weeks with cattle.
One of the products of Colombia that I know has really affected American markets are the cut flowers.
Yes.
Including roses. Mm-hmm. We are down to one. He knows all about roses. And it wasn't because of you, but we're down to one.
One rose bush?
One company that still grows roses in America.
And I worked for him.
So, there were tons of cut flowers lost. Carnations.
Yeah. The '80s were particularly difficult.
Yeah. I mean, they thought they would introduce, as far as I understand it, an alternative to growing coca in the 80s, Mr. Reagan and his crew. And so what they ended up doing is not stop the coca.
Well, in fact, the roses for a while from Colombia, it was understood were serving as a mule for transporting the cocaine into the U.S. You only have to load a pound of coke into one box and you ship in 1,000 boxes. How many pitchforks do you stick into the box?
Yeah, right.
You know, to look for it. Yeah. But, that's
part of it. The other thing that Americans should begin to be educated about is the laundering of money.
Mm.
So when you have an industry like the cut flower business, and it's a wonderful opportunity for money laundering. So they send the cocaine up, and then they bring down the cash. And what do they do with the cash? They set up a flower industry, you know. So it multiplies the negative effect. And here it affected the competition here locally because a lot of flowers were grown.
Oh, yeah, it was 10 cents on the dollar sometimes in terms of costs and what we could compete with and couldn't compete with in that regard. Well, now, turning to perhaps a brighter side, I know that you've told me that Colombia has more than 3,000 different species of fruit and edible plant. How many of those do you think are growing on your preserve there?
Oh, God. You know, we always talk about it. I mean, I've been discovering for 30 years.
Sure.
And every once in a while I say, oh, you can eat this? Oh, this is a food? But I'm not, you know, I'm a pioneer in growing the forest, but I'm not necessarily a pioneer in tasting everything. If I don't know what a tree is, I mean, one of the things that we do, and this is just typical, we'll pick a leaf and crunch it up, smell it, and then taste it. And that helps us identify. So
some leaves contain cyanides, and you might have to
always interested
draw lots.
In those shows that talk about the canopy of a rainforest and all the fruits and vegetables and things that the monkeys eat. And I figure, you know, if it doesn't hurt a monkey, might not. Yeah. If monkeys avoid them.
Monkeys, perhaps.
If monkeys avoid them. Yeah. Then,
don't go by the birds, though.
Yeah. No, can't go by the birds.
No.
No, there's some amazing toxic plants that birds eat.
Yeah.
But I did, before we switch over to that, I wanted to answer a question that you made before, and that is that the other side of the mountain.
Yeah.
So it's not the big western range that I'm talking about now, the 14,000 feet. There's a peak we call Pico del Oro, which is Parrot's Peak. It looks like a parrot's beak. That one is only about 8,000 feet, and I've climbed it. You know, it's a day hike. And for me, and I went with two of my kids, and I actually, there was a 5-year-old boy in the party, and he escalated. He was really good. He had to be picked up in a couple places, but anyhow, he's 17 now, off in Massachusetts or Connecticut, or anyhow, on the other side of that mountain is an area we call Jamundí, And Jamundí is where the Sinaloa cartel has based itself. Mm-hmm. Now, the dissidents of the FARC, there was a peace treaty that was negotiated a few years ago that the last administration did not give any heed to. And in not giving heed to that, there were two elements. One was that the people who had renounced weapons tried to set up, amongst other things, farming. And they were allotted certain lands to do that. But then the government did not defend them from the paramilitary groups that were
FARC. FARC would be the guerrilla group?
FARC was the guerrilla group. And they had been the longest-lasting guerrilla group in the world up to that point, more than 50 years, close to 60 years. But there are other groups. Mm-hmm. So the ELN is one. So anyhow, the dissidents of the FARC, the ones that did not go along with the peace treaty or who revoked it because basically the government revoked it, they went back to drug trafficking. So they have a communist ideology. They're Marxist-Leninist, but in practice, they're major capitalists when it comes to
the price of coca.
The price.
Yeah, well, there's no better example of capitalism than cocaine traffic or heroin traffic or fentanyl traffic now from Mexico. But it's also no better example of anarchy. And so for the anarchists out there, I invite you to look at Colombia and see what it looks like when there is no government intervention, the lack of presence of the state. So back to the Sinaloa cartel negotiated with the FARC for protection. And that's one of the ways the FARC makes money is by protecting certain people and it extorts money and so on. A year ago, somebody who lives in that region and is a national park ranger where I am, came to me and said, man, the FARC rounded us up, and they said everybody who has land, if you have to devote 1 hectare to growing coca. Mm-hmm. Well, about 3-4 weeks ago, he came back and he said, oh, man, the FARC rounded us all up again, and it was 1,500 farmers and local residents. Everybody had to put their cell phone down on the table or have it confiscated because we weren't there to chat. And they told us, who has coca? And nobody raises his hand. And he says, no, I know who's got coca. The commander says this, right? He says, okay, so you got coca and you got coca. You got 2 hectares. You got 5 hectares. You got this much. Hectare, by the way, is about 2 acres.
Right.
And so I have a parcel that's 20 hectares, and it's a little over 40 acres of forest now. So he said, I want to tell you. The president of Colombia, who is the commander-in-chief.
The new president.
The new president, Gustavo Petro Urrego. He is offering a peace to everybody. We call it total peace. And I'm going to go, our division of the FARC is going to go with that. They're not just offering a peace accord with guerrillas, they're offering peace to drug traffickers and saying, lay off the business, stop killing people, and we'll work something out. If you have crimes against humanity, you're going to have to pay for them. But we want total peace in this country, and we want Colombia to become the capital of life. And so this guerrilla commander said, anybody who has coca, I give you a month to eradicate it.
Wow.
And you're going to start growing food crops.
Wow.
So it's an amazing thing. Now, this president is called a leftist president, but he is a capitalist. So I don't know how you can beat both.
Wow.
Yeah. Left bank of the San River. But anyhow, that's it's a looking up right now.
That's great news. Yeah. That's great news. Let's hope that sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my next question was, were you ever terrified that you're sitting out on your piece of property and somebody comes by and you have no way of protecting yourself and pops you off?
I have ways of protecting myself, and that is how I behave with other people. Mm-hmm. So I believe very strongly in, and I mean, for goodness sakes, I picked crops when I first came to the States. I worked on farms, cleaning cages for animals and stuff like that. So I have a lot of sympathy for laborers, and particularly for food laborers. So now if I have an employee, I pay him way above minimum wage. I make sure their family is well taken care of. I make sure that they have incentives for education if they want to go to college later on. I try to find a way to help them go to college. So that's my protection. I have neighbors who care for me. And the gorillas, when they've been there in that region, have said, they send greetings. And they say, they call me profesor, which is basically means teacher or professor. And say, tell the professor hi and to keep doing what he's doing. And that's because there's no weapon that can protect me. There's no military, no police force, none of that.
That's a beautiful attitude, Marco. I think you've got it down.
It's worked so far.
This is In the Garden, and we're here with Joe Truscott and Marco Poner. We're talking about climate change. We're talking about the forests of Colombia and the impacts on food crops and nursery crops and Marco's preserve, Agua Viva. So with all of these different activities going on, we were talking about the cartels, we were talking about the influence of the coca crop and others, but we touched on this whole idea that there was a certain amount of money laundering going on with regards to floral products. But what other sorts of products are there that are growing in Colombia right now, whether native or non-native, that may or may not be getting developed as they should?
I would begin to say that in Colombia, we need to get to know our own fruits. Again, the problem has to do with politics and economics because and topography, how the country is laid out. So we have these three huge mountain ranges that divide the country into valleys and plains and then shore on the Pacific. So the Pacific shore is pretty narrow. It's about 60 to 100 kilometers wide, the Pacific coast, and it's dense jungle, and it's one of the places where I have stood and had tears rolling down my eyes, just crying from the beauty of it because it's just so gorgeous, so full of life. The Putumayo area, which is on the east side, at the top of the Amazon basin, also had that effect. So there's an enormous amount of life, but very few roads. And that preserves the life, but it also keeps us from getting to know one another. So even the way we speak Spanish is different in different parts of the Colombian nation. And the foods that we eat, so in some parts that are high elevation, potatoes are really big. Potatoes come originally from the Andes. In Peru, I've heard a range of 440 to 4,000 species of potatoes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just every potatoes.
Shape, size and color. Yeah.
And
oca.
There's so many different kinds. So that's up in the mountains. But then you get down into the lower parts of the mountain range, and it's a different climate, so what we're going to produce is different. And, you know, people think Colombia, they think coca. They think Colombia, they think coffee. One of the things that we really have to think about is cacao or cocoa, from which chocolate is made. And one of the economic things that we have to look at is, why is it that we are producing raw products and exporting raw products, and yet the biggest distribution of chocolate, for example, comes from
Hershey, what? Pennsylvania.
No, I'm sorry. That's not chocolate. That's candy. That's not real chocolate. But no, actually, the biggest distributor of coffee in the world is Switzerland, the biggest distributor of chocolate.
Chocolate, yeah.
So why aren't we we have the raw product? You know, why aren't we producing the... And part of it is just plain not knowing the recipes or having the machines and so on. So it's infrastructure.
The production of cacao and coffee are both typically they're shade grown crops, and they require that cover. But the coffee, which is not native to Colombia,
not at all,
is not being grown in shade grown plantations.
That has changed.
Yes.
And you know, I grew coffee for 25 years, and I decided I'd cut out, partially because I was running out of territory to plant trees in. And as I started planting trees amongst the coffee trees,
Shade trees.
But yeah. I mean, they're trees. My dedication is to the conservation of native species.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we have a lot of different native species that are in extreme danger of extinction. And so what I do is I hunt for seed. Yeah, now I'm older, so I pay people to go hunt for certain seeds and bring them.
Coffee is not native to
Coffee is native to Africa, I believe, yeah. Kenya,
and
Ethiopia.
And there seems to be just one variety of it, Arabic.
Yeah, the Arabica is...
Arabica, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's it's Latin for Arabic. Oh. yeah, and that actually, for me, was the best variety to grow. Mm-hmm. So I did not grow... I had maybe half an acre of non-shade, and it was repulsive to me.
Yeah. So you're bringing up some very interesting topics, too, that I think that we could pivot back here to the U.S. and California in particular, in that a lot of our products, and here, where we're not suffering from too much rain, we are in a position water-wise here in the state of California where our agricultural crops, and this comes all the way down to our personal gardens as well, are under drastic impacts and threat. For instance, and you know, my focus has often been here locally and towards the south, where there's a lot of orchard growing of pistachios and almonds. And we you know, California, we have 400 plus crops, and 13 of the crops that we grow here are unique to California. Things like pomegranates and dates and kiwis, olives and almonds are a almost 100% market for us, but they are highly intensive water using crops. Now, up north in Sutter and Butte counties and Colusa County, rice farmers are having a hard time right now. I went out looking for wild rice this year for Thanksgiving, and I couldn't find any on the market, and came to find out that wherein on an annual basis, normally 100,000 acres of rice are planted and irrigated in three counties in the north. This year, only 1,000 acres, or 1%, was actually irrigated and
farmed.
That's
a huge hit.
There's no water.
They don't pump it from the ground. They're dependent upon the Sacramento River to fill canals, to flood and irrigate. And then there are all these ripple effects, aren't there, where after they're done harvesting, they would reflood their fields, and all the migrating birds, the geese and the ducks, et cetera, would come in and habitat those areas. So we're looking at that, but then at the same time, in southern portions and other areas of California where alfalfa and pasturage are two huge crops, and alfalfa being one of the most water-intensive and using crops, but we're exporting it. It's not for domestic use. We're sending California water overseas, generally for the production of cattle and beef in other countries. Now, it sounds to me like Colombia is having some of these issues, but maybe not on the same scale given the water issues.
Well, again, part of growing crops is the infrastructure to commercialize them. And to, you know, if you're not sending your crop in a dugout canoe, you'll want to send it in a truck to where it might reach a railroad. Railway systems have pretty much been taken apart down there under some of the neoliberal governments. Now they're wishing they hadn't. But we have a problem with transporting foods as well as getting to know them. Then the other problem that we're encountering, I think that we've had our love affair with the global commerce, free trade agreements all over the place. And so one of the things that's occurred is that rice and corn, which were grown for self-sufficiency in Colombia, are now imported from the United States. Wheat, rice, corn. And that had a huge impact in Mexico, too, because what happened is that because these are food crops that are subsidized by the U.S. government, other countries couldn't compete. And so Mexico stopped producing its own corn. Colombia stopped producing its own corn. And the result is you have all these people that are looking for a job, and they come north. And then we say, what are they doing at our border? But getting back to the crop side of things, as we... Under the present government, hopefully, he is trying to move the military into road construction and trail construction. Because since the big lands are taken over for sugarcane and cattle, the small farmers are all up on mountain slopes, which are extremely difficult to cultivate and which are prone to erosion and so on. And so, again, they wind up with intensive petrochemicals and so on, which are relying on Ukraine and Russia for fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have food problems. I like to focus on fruits, and I also believe that nuts are a possible major alternative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. for example, cashews. There's several species of cashews, and most of our cashews we get from India. The thing with cashews is that they also are labor intensive. You got to crack that seed shell open.
The one seed per fruit, right?
Yeah. Now, yeah. The good thing is that the fruit itself is edible, which,
yeah.
again, most people don't seem to know.
Oh, the raw fruit before it forms.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Yeah. And yeah. and the peel is good for animals.
Interesting.
So, you know, it's 100% edible. By the way, cashews, the seed grows on the outside of the fruit.
Yeah.
It's got this little appendix, and it looks like an appendix. It's probably
it's the shape of a cashew.
It's
hanging down at the bottom of the fruit.
Yep.
Yeah. But, I think the problem is the processing of the fruit.
Yes.
I don't think the shelf life is more than a day or two, and what do you do with it?
That's where, again, infrastructure would come in, because, I have all these citrix that grow wild now,
mm-hmm.
but they're not Meyer's lemons, you know. They're So I say, well, what if I just make juice and freeze it?
Yeah, tell me about Brazil nuts. You were talking about nuts. Is that really
Brazil nuts do well in the eastern part of Colombia,
and it is an American native.
Yes. Yeah. So and there's scads of fruit. I mean, the sapotassias are a fairly big family.
Mm-hmm.
And the sapote itself, or the mamey, they're not that well known here in the mm-hmm. States, mm-hmm. but they could be.
Oh, they're great. I am growing a sapote in Prunedale. So
yeah, that's pretty amazing, because I don't know what you do with when you get frost.
it's in a very protected area. I've been growing it for over 20 years. I actually acquired the plant in San Diego at a commercial nursery, and that after having tasted a piece of fruit at a farmer's market and falling in love with it. But
So here's another one that Americans, Californians should be acquainted with, and that's the chirimoya.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the chirimoya, I found out 20 years ago, had been growing in California for 90 years. Yeah. So now we're talking 110.
We have some growing on the Elkhorn Slough right now, commercially.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And it's one of the, it's just one of the most exquisite fruits I've ever had. Now, it has a bigger cousin, another species, which is the guanabana. In English, they call it soursop.
Uh-huh.
It grows in hotter regions.
Yeah.
So I have a few trees on the reserve. They may blossom, but I haven't been able to get a good guanabana out of them, and it's one of my favorites.
What about guavas? Are they?
Oh, guavas are, God, they're so prolific.
Yeah, I see them now in the shops all the time. Is that something that can be grown here?
I'm not sure how well it will grow here. Again, anything, we're opposite in California and in Colombia, because Colombia, generally speaking, won't get frost. And frost will kill a lot of stuff, like bananas, for example.
Oh, absolutely.
One night of frost and your leaves are all black the next day.
Right.
And by the way, bananas don't grow on trees. There's no such
yes,
thing
you
as...
Yes, you corrected me, and I've never forgotten that.
Oh, or forgiven, huh?
Encente, Musa.
I happened to say banana tree on the thing, and I was corrected.
I completely forgot about that. But it's an extremely common... the thing is, what do you do with this thing that grows, you know?
It just keeps growing, right?
Six,
it sends out new...
Oh, it sends out new children, we call them.
Yeah, the pups.
And then we have to choose between the ones we call flags and the ones we call needles. So you want you want needles, not flags, because flags are like a straight pole, and they're not thick at the bottom, so they don't have anchorage, and they don't really have enough...
Both produce fruit, though?
They produce fruit, but the skinny ones will produce this very limp, skinny little things that aren't worth growing.
Yeah.
You don't want your energy going that way. So, Where was I?
I'm sorry.
Bananas are not native either. Bananas are native to Papua New Guinea.
Yeah,
and
they
travel from there to Southeast Asia and to.
They come with their India. Own package, so it really is.
They're amazing. I have several varieties, and I don't buy bananas in the States because they're insipid compared to what I.
Well, you were showing me a picture of one that's as big as your arm with orange flesh. And I'm just jealous because my banana grew a small cluster of blue ice cream bananas that are still hard as a rock and probably will remain so and inedible. We'll see.
But the guavas I'd go along with, and I think I think there are some merits. I mean, we do have to do some transportation. So I would say, hey, find the right places for growing guavas and so on. And for growing avocados, I mean, my avocado trees didn't produce this year, I say, due to the weather. And there's some trees that will only flower every 10 years.
Yeah. I don't know if you're a cook, but we need to have you back to talk about foods, tropical foods,
especially
and what to find it, and where in the market, and what kind of recipes. And we're going to have you back to talk about that later.
Yeah.
I will talk about what we call chontaduros. I don't know even what to call them here in the States because they don't get here hardly. But it's a palm fruit that was hybridized 1,500 years B.C., which says something about the science that was being done way before the Spanish came, you know, 3,000 years before the Spanish showed up.
Wow.
So there were civilizations, and now we're corroborating that with petroglyphs and so on, too. But the chontaduro is an amazing fruit. I think it's the highest protein fruit there is.
Oh, my goodness.
And the only thing is it takes – you got to cook it for an hour. But it went all the way from northeast Bolivia where it was developed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was trafficked all the way up to Costa Rica and planted up to Costa Rica. So you have this
– Is that a palm?
It's a palm.
Yeah.
It's a palm.
As long as it doesn't smell like a durian or –
It doesn't smell like a durian. Yeah.
If you're not familiar with the durian, it's
stinkiest Indonesian thing you're ever tasting.
Yeah. If you think ginkgo smells bad, Well, this has been absolutely fascinating, Marco. And we didn't talk too much about what's going on here in California with your other 6 months of the year. But how much longer will you be up here before you go back down to Agua Viva?
I'm hoping to get my taxes done in February and head south for about half a year.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. Well, we'll certainly want to have you back when you return. Any last thoughts for our listeners about where we're going next?
You know, I would. I'll put in a plug for drought-resistant plants, and especially if they're native Colombian.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll put in a negative plug. Think about changing our growing avocado habit because the cartels are in Mexico. And I believe in Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, and all the way down into Argentina because the Sinaloa cartel has taken over. I mean, Pablo Escobar is like a nickel compared to a dollar of the Sinaloa.
Wow.
So, you know, he's a little guy. He doesn't know it because he's dead.
Mm.
my father's buried in the same cemetery.
Oh, boy.
But they are getting into the avocado industry big time.
Wow.
And they have the money to buy out people's land, and it's a monoculture. Avocados are not naturally monoculture. Mm-hmm. Avocados are native to America. Mm-hmm. Their scientific name is Persea Americana. So think about, make sure if you're buying avocados that they're not forests being knocked down to grow avocados.
So buy U.S. grown.
I would say buy California grown avocados.
California grown.
Yeah.
You got it right here.
Not Mexican.
The power of boycott is something that can save lives.
Yeah.
So
and literally saving lives of the peasants in Mexico who have their water diverted from them by the cartels.
Oh. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Marco.
Sure.
It's been great.
Happy holidays to you.
Thank you.